Thank you for listening to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. This is Real Sports Talk for the Real Sports Fan. And I definitely appreciate all you Real Sports fans who are listening right now. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do me a huge favor and leave this podcast a 5-star rating. That 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, that 5-star rating review will definitely be appreciated. If you're listening on any other platform, that could be iHeartRadio, Podomatic, wherever, please share from that platform so that your friends and family can see the podcast, listen to the podcast, love the podcast, subscribe, and then send it to their friends and family. I'm trying to get this podcast to the highest levels of podcastivity, and I need your help to get there. I would truly, truly appreciate it. Big time episode for you guys today. Got some boxing talk, some basketball talk, and some more basketball talk, all right? So we're going to get into it. We're going to start with boxing. We had a big time boxing card this past weekend that was headlined by Tim Tszyu versus Sebastian Fundora. And this was the first card that Premier Boxing Champions presented on Amazon Prime. Now, Premier Boxing Champions was on Showtime previously. And then Showtime said that they're done with the boxing game. So PBC had to find a new home. They found a new home with Amazon. Now, a few episodes ago, I wondered out loud if PBC reached out to other platforms. I'm pretty sure they did. I'm pretty sure they did their due diligence to make sure that they got the most money for all of their talent. And that's more than just the fighters. That's the announcers. That's the commentators. That's the ringside reporters. That's everybody involved with everything that goes on. The camera people, the producers. Like, it's so much that goes into making a show like this happen. And I wasn't sure if all the people that go into that were Showtime employees or Premier Boxing Champion employees. And it looks like if they were Showtime employees, Showtime let them out of their contract to go over to Amazon with PBC. If so, they might have been PBC employees. And the reason that stuck out to me is that I thought that they were going to have to hire all new people, because all those other people were still going to be under contract with Showtime. But they didn't have to. There's pretty much all the same people that were with Showtime. And everything looked good. Now, I didn't get to hear it all. I was watching it at a sports bar, so I didn't get to hear it all. The next event, I don't think it'll be pay-per-view, so I most likely will just watch it at home. And I'll get to hear it as well as watch it. But one thing I do like about watching boxing and not hearing it is that when I'm scoring a fight, I'm not influenced by what the commentators are saying. So as a judge, if you're doing it for real and you're there, all you're hearing is the crowd. And you're taught to go by what you see, not by what you hear. So I haven't done professional boxing, but I've done judging for amateur boxing. And sometimes you'll have a kid who's family is big, and all of them came. And every time he does something good, they're cheering. But you have to ignore those cheers and pay attention to what you see. And as you're judging, watching on TV, you gotta do the same thing. And it's easier, if you can't hear it, to just go by what you see. So that's what I like about watching it. Sometimes at home, I'll put the volume down, depending on the fight. Sometimes I do wanna hear what the commentators are saying. But other times, I just want to see with my eyes and judge just from there, and then I'll turn it back up afterwards. So watching this, everything looked good. Looks like PBC on Prime was a success. We have to see what the numbers are. I don't think this one's going to do crazy numbers as far as the pay-per-view, because it wasn't the initial fight that we thought it was going to be. Initially, we thought we're going to get Tim Tszyu versus Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman gets hurt in training camp. He's replaced by Sebastian Fundora. Sebastian Fundora was this high-rising 154-pounder who's very unique because he's 6'5". And normally when you're 6'5", you're not 154 pounds, or you can't make 154 pounds for a fight. I'm 6'2". I ain't been 154 since ninth grade, and I'm not super skinny anymore, but I'm not big by any means. And even at my most fit, 154 was a stretch. You know, when I was in the Navy and I was playing ball 3-4 times a week, I was probably 175. So 154 is, that's hard. At 6'2", I can't imagine at 6'5", but everybody's natural body composition is different. But that's why he stands out, because he's that tall at 154 pounds and was rising up. But then his last fight against Brian Mendoza gets KO'd. And it's like, oh, okay. Maybe this guy isn't it. But because of the injury to Keith Thurman, he's still one of the highest ranking guys at 154. He steps in and gets this chance. If you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready. This definitely was a lesson in that, for sure, for anybody in a profession. Sebastian Fedor stayed ready, didn't have to get ready, and took advantage of his opportunity. But before we talk about the main event, let's talk about some of the other fights on the card. So the first fight on the pay-per-view portion of the card was Julio Cesar Martinez versus Angelino Cordova. Great fight to start the card. Great fight. These two guys are both just warriors. They went at it. And early in the fight, it looked like Martinez was going to knock Cordova out. He was dominating him. And Cordova started to adjust in the later rounds. I'll say 7th, 8th round, you saw him adjusting, getting more comfortable. He even started to showboat a little bit, because he really learned the rhythm of Martinez. And with Martinez, it's funny because Martinez, the way he fights is so opposite of what you would teach. You know, he doesn't throw a lot of straight punches. If he does throw straight punches, it's because he's just walking you down. A lot of times he's square. You never want to be square. If you're training somebody to box, you never want to be to the point where your feet are shoulder width apart, as if you're about to get into a basketball defensive stance. Sometimes he's standing like that in a boxing ring, which puts you in a horrible position defensively. But he gets away with it, and that's what the greats can do. The greats can do things that are outside of the fundamentals, along with having the fundamentals. My favorite boxer of all time is Roy Jones Jr. That's what made him great. That he could do things outside the fundamentals, along with having those fundamentals. And I think that combination is what a lot of people miss. When they emulate the greats, they miss the part where those guys had the fundamentals, but they also just have other gifts. They're exceptionally quick, fast. Their reflexes are incredible. They have those other things along with the fundamentals you learn at first. And with Martinez, his fundamentals are all over the place, but you can tell when he gets in trouble, he gets back into it, and he knows how to find those fundamentals. And that's how he was able to win this fight. Close fight. Cordova's a really good fighter, and I think that he'll be able to get another shot at a world title. For Martinez, as far as what's next for him, I don't know if he has to move up, but there's definitely some options out there for Martinez going forward, but definitely he may want to get back to not being as laxed with his fundamentals going forward, because he definitely, if he was going against a more powerful puncher than Cordova, could have found himself knocked out in this one, in those later rounds. But he's entertaining. He's always going to be somebody who people want to see because of it. But that was a really good fight to start it off. The second fight was not as good. It was Arislanda Lara versus Michael Zarafa. And Arislanda Lara is now 40 years old. And it makes me feel old because I've watched his whole career, basically. And if you remember Arislanda Lara, he was someone who was very athletic, glided around the ring, made it very tough for his opponents to put him in a certain area because he was always moving. He'd tag you 2 times, he's moving. 2-3 punch combination, he's moving. A lot of people thought that he defeated Canelo Alvarez in a fight where a lot of the judges, gave the edge to Canelo because they felt like Lara moved too much. But now Arislanda Lara is the complete opposite. Stationary, but because he still has those fundamentals of not getting hit He knows how to not get hit without moving. And that's very hard to do. Very hard to do. And the way he does it is, his jab is so good. He does a great job of jabbing both under and over his opponent's jab. So his opponent will throw the jab out there, and there's Linda Lara's southpaw. So a lot of times he's going against an orthodox fighter who's right-handed, and their lead hand is their left hand with the jab. So Zarafa, he's throwing that jab out there, and every time he threw the jab out there, there's Linda Lara was ready to counter with his jab, either under it with a body shot or over it straight to the face. And when that happens enough, now you start to get cautious of it, which means if I throw this jab, now the 1-2 is open because you're worried about the jab. Second round, caught with a mean 1-2 straight left hand, knocked him out. And you got to give all the credit in the world to Errez Landolara for being able to adjust as he lost some athleticism, but still be very, very good at what he's doing, just in a different way. Now, he's 40. I don't know what's next for him. He's in a weird place because the 160-pound division is trash right now. Like, clearly the best guy at 160 is Jana Beck for Top Rank, right? Jana Beck may have to move to 168 to truly, you know, put his name out there, truly make big money. Because boxing heads like myself know about him, but the casuals don't know who he is. And he has a name that's hard to pronounce. That's only why I only say his first name. His last name, you can go look it up. I should look it up now, but it's a million letters in it. So that's why I just go by Jana Beck. If you Google Jana Beck, he'll come up. And he's dangerous, very dangerous at 160, but he needs to move up to 168. Or if he can move down to 154, whichever way he can go to fight better competition. But as far as 160, there's Landolara. I guess he can continue going, but I don't know who else he could fight. I know PBC probably has a plethora of guys for him, but he's 40. So let's see how long he can keep this up, but kudos to him for still being very good at this age. Now the co-main event. We had Izzat Cruz versus Rolando Romero for, I believe it's the WBA title at 140. Now, Rolando Romero, the way he got the title last year was a crime against humanity. You don't remember, he was fighting against Ismael Barrazo. And Ismael Barrazo was listed at 40 years old, but honestly, not being ageist, looked like he was much older than that. Right? Now, maybe he just, you know, his face didn't age well. Some people look older than they are. Some people look younger than they are. Right? He looked a lot older. Like, if you just saw him on the street, you would think he was like 55, 60 years old. That's how old he looked. Now, he was in great shape. From the neck down, you could see 40, maybe. But face up or neck up, definitely not seeing that. But he's in this fight against Ismael Barrazo. And the reason I bring up his age is that I think it has something to do with the stoppage. So Romero is getting dominated by Barrazo. Not able to do anything with him. There's a point in the ninth round where Rolando Romero finally kind of turns the tides and gets some offense going. As soon as he gets some offense going, the referee stops the fight, as if Ismael Barrazo is in danger. And it was the first time that Romero had any type of advantage in the fight. Barrazo had not been hurt at this point, didn't show any signs of being in true danger. And there was no reason to stop the fight. It's the worst stoppage I've ever seen. And this includes Richard Steele back in the day with the stoppage in that fight with Mildred Taylor. Because Mildred Taylor was at least actually being damaged and had been hurt already in the fight. Barrazo hadn't been hurt at all. So with Barrazo, he gets robbed. Romero gets the title. Romero, even prior to that, I don't know how he qualified for that fight. You gotta remember, Rolando Romero was at 135, talked his way into a fight against Gervonta Davis. Didn't earn that fight. There was nothing on his resume that said he should be fighting Gervonta Davis on pay-per-view, but somehow he talked his way into it. Talked his way into that fight, got knocked out by Gervonta Tank Davis, right? Had a couple of rounds where he looked okay. And I guess that's where people thought he was okay. Thought he was decent. I never thought he was good. I called the fight perfectly. The most accurate prediction I've ever made. Going into that fight, I said that Rolando Romero is sloppy with his footwork, sloppy with his punches. He leans when he punches. He's going to mess around and lean right into a counter shot from Tank and get knocked out going forward. Sixth round. What happened? Sixth round, Rolando Romero throws himself right into a Gervonta Davis counterpunch, gets knocked out. Then, like I said, because he's famous now, because he got knocked out by Tank, that somehow got him a title shot, and then he got gifted a title. Goes into this fight against Izzat Cruz. Izzat Cruz is a small 140-pounder. He's small for 135, let alone 140, but he's a pit bull. He got that nickname for a reason. He definitely earns it. And he's another guy who you wouldn't teach to punch the way he punches, but because he's so small, he has to throw these looping shots. And Romero is so bad at defending himself that he's just getting hit with these looping shots. He's our first round. He was out here wobbling around and whatnot. And Izzat Cruz dominated. Dominated and eventually stopped him in the eighth round. Romero should have never had a title. Should have never been in contention for a title. Should have never been in a fight for a title. So the fact that he had a belt is crazy. Now, Izzat Cruz, you wonder what's the options for him going forward, right? Because it's very interesting with him at 140. So right now I'm going to pull up the boxing rankings to see what are some options for him. Some people have asked me, like, who do you see him fighting next? What are some good matchups? One of my homeboys asked me about Teofimo Lopez. Do you see him having a good fight against Teofimo? And a lot of people are down on Teofimo because Teofimo struggled with Jermaine Ortiz. The thing is, Pitbull can't fight nothing like Jermaine Ortiz. Jermaine Ortiz moved around, made Teofimo chase him. Pitbull has to come to you. He has to. Like, because of his lack of size, he can't be the boxer fighting off his back foot. He just can't. So because of the style that he has to fight with, he's tailor-made for Teofimo. Teofimo would destroy him, I believe. And that's no shade towards Pitbull. He's definitely legit and good, but his style is just tailor-made for somebody like Teofimo to counter-shot him. And Pitbull could take a punch for sure. He went in there against Tank and didn't get knocked out. So we know he could take a punch. So I'm not saying he'll get knocked out, but he might get dominated for 12 rounds against Teo. Devin Haney. I heard that Pitbull called out Devin Haney. That's another fight. He's tailor-made for Devin Haney to pick apart. Devin Haney is a master with the jab, master with distance. He would just, easy night. It's an easy night for Devin Haney. So I would have to go with Teofimo and Devin Haney beating Pitbull pretty easily. Some of the other options, you have Sabril Matias. Matias is somebody who's going to come forward. He wants to punch. It's going to be an entertaining fight. Matias likes to basically just wear you down with his amount of punching, the plethora of punches, the variation with his punches. It'll be very interesting because Pitbull also wants to come forward and just wear you down. So who's going to wear down first? I think Matias will win, but it'll be very, very entertaining. Some other options at 140. Regis Progre is an option there. Could he win against Regis Progre? Maybe. Regis Progre would be there for him to hit. It'll be very interesting that one. Could Progre hurt him? You don't know because he could take a punch, but Progre definitely has a good punch with him. Richardson Hitchens, that's another sharpshooter who could take his time and pick him apart. Jack Catterall is looking for a fight now because Josh Taylor can't stay healthy. So Jack Catterall is another very slick boxer at 140. Arnold Barboza Jr., another very slick fighter. That'll be very interesting. So there's some options there where he could win for sure. But I definitely don't think he wants no pieces of Teofimo or Devin Haney. So now let's talk about the main event. Main event, Sebastian Fedora versus Tim Zhu. So, to start the fight, first round, you can see Tim Tszyu trying to figure out Fedora, figure out the distance, because Fedora is 6'5 with a crazy reach. And, you know, Tim Tszyu's a natural 154 pounder, so he's not used to fighting anybody that tall. And also, this is on 12 days' notice. So he was training the whole time for Keith Thurman, who Keith Thurman's going to be moving around the ring, looking to pot shot him. And now he's fighting against a guy in Fedora who, even at 6'5", doesn't fight like he's 6'5". Like, he stands up tall, but he doesn't really... In this fight, he did. In this fight, he used his jab. But in most fights, he's trying to bang with you. And that's what got him in trouble in his last fight, where he got knocked out, trying to bang with Brian Mendoza. So in this fight, he took a different approach. Fedora was cautious. He definitely was cautious in those first two rounds. The first round in 3/4. He was very cautious. In the second round, you saw Tim Tszyu starting to time Fedora. He knew right when to come in, go under the jab, and was catching Fedora with some good shots. Towards the end of the second round, Tim Tszyu tries to go in and gets caught by an elbow from Fedora by the top of his forehead. And the location is very important, because the location, I believe, is what made it so hard to stop the bleeding. And it was a really deep and wide gash from the elbow. And the crazy thing is, Fedora didn't even move his elbow. He's got really sharp elbows. So Tim Tszyu hit his elbow and just started gushing. Just blood right away coming from his forehead. And you can see the cut, man. He tried to, like, put some stuff on to stop it. It stopped it for, like, probably a second. Then, boom, just blood is coming out. So for the rest of the fight, Tim Tszyu just fighting with a blood mask on his face. Fedora, I believe his nose might have been broken because it was bleeding just severely, just blood gushing out his nose. So this is just a bloody mess, right? And everybody who's watching it at the bar coming up to me like, man, this is crazy. This is just nasty. That was the main thing. People were like, oh, this is nasty. It's all that blood. Ugh. It was. It was crazy to watch. And the blood obviously affected Tim Tszyu. Not in a way like, oh, he's scared of blood, but in a way of, like, it's coming down his face. He can't see. And I was surprised that it wasn't stopped. Because normally when you have something like that happen that early in the fight, they'll stop it for no contest. Now, I do believe, this may be the conspiracy theorist in me, I do believe if, let's say, Tim Tszyu and Sebastian Fedora were the third fight and not the main event, it would have been stopped. But because it was the main event and it's the first fight on Amazon for PBC, they wanted to give the people their money's worth. So they come back. If you have a bad outcome where this is stopped in the second round because of the accidental elbow for a no contest, and people had just spent $70 on a pay-per-view, that's a bad look. Now, boxing fans know these things happen, but if it's a casual fan who's buying this because they see it on Amazon, they're like, oh, okay, I'll watch it, nothing else on, let's just check it out. And they get a bad outcome like that, they're not gonna come back and spend $70 again. So I think that's part of it. Now, again, that's a conspiracy theory, not proven, but I believe if this was the co-main event, not the main event, it gets stopped. But it keeps going. And Tim Tszyu, he's trying hard, but you can tell he's struggling with the amount of blood that he was losing. And I don't know how much blood you can lose before it becomes a thing where it's dangerous. He lost a lot. Now, my wife, she's a nurse. I remember asking, like, how much blood can you lose? Like, watching the fight with her. And she was like, a lot. You can lose a lot of blood before it becomes a thing. Now, I don't know exactly how much a lot is, but obviously it was more than what Tim Tszyu lost. But it was crazy watching these guys go at it. Fedora did a great job. He definitely became more aggressive after that. It was still a very close fight. Not mad at Fedora getting a split decision at all. I had it scored as a draw, so it could go either way. And a lot of the rounds were, it felt like at times they both were just trying to survive. Where they both, there was nothing really, from a strategic standpoint, there was nothing really there where you could say, like, okay, this is what they're doing. It was just, all right, I'm trying to see through this blood and get to you. And it was Fedora, like, all right, I'm going to throw these, this 1-2 wasn't too much really mixing up, right? It wasn't a lot of like, oh, look at that nice body shot. Oh, look, I saw how he did a little dip there and then went to the body. Oh, he slipped that punch. It wasn't much of that. It was just kind of straightforward, both guys trying to just get to each other. And it was more of just a war than, a beautiful science that people know boxing to be. But that type of fight could still be good because of the many strategies that go into it, right? And I say many, I mean MINI, not many as in a lot. So Sebastian Fedora gets the win. After the fight, Errol Spence calls out Sebastian Fedora. Terence Crawford has already called him out and was listed as the mandatory. Now, both of those guys were fighting at 147, have decided to move up to 154. Because of the circumstances of this fight, Tim Tszyu deserves his rematch. He deserves to be fighting Sebastian Fedora again, right? And he deserves a chance to get his title back. When you're a defending champion, I know there must not have been no rematch clause because people are just moving right on to Terence Crawford. Tim Tszyu deserves his rematch. He's been the man at 154 for the longest. He's been waiting for his big fight. And unfortunately, when his big fight came, an accidental elbow changed the trajectory of this whole thing. He deserves a rematch. And Fedora should advocate for him. Like, if you really are like, I'm this champ, I'm this dude, you should advocate and say, Fedora deserves a rematch. I understand that Terence Crawford is the mandatory and that's big money. That's why the sanctioning bodies wanted him to be the mandatory. But I always say this, don't put the business in front of the sport. The sport of boxing at its best is big business. But don't put the business in front of the sport, because now it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, right? The real boxing fans would be like, come on, man, Tim Tszyu deserves his rematch. So going forward, I think that should be the next fight. Fedora Tszyu 2. And then if Terence Crawford wants the winner, he can fight somebody else at 154. Looking at the options at 154, one moment. So going up to 154, was pulling up the boxing rankings. That is where ad come up. That threw me off. So you got Erickson Lubin, somebody who Terence Crawford could fight. That's, I ain't gonna lie to you, he probably destroys Lubin. You got Josh Kelly. You have Jack Cool K. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you, the names aren't the best at 154 after the main guys. But there's other guys who he can fight who are top ranked that he can take on, look good against those guys or that guy, and then fight the winner of Tszyu Fedora 2. Same thing for Errol Spence. Errol Spence can take on one of those guys that I named and then look good in that fight, because that's what Errol Spence needs there. Errol Spence needs a fight where he looks good in that fight, then maybe he gets the winner of Tszyu Fedora 2. But let Tim Tszyu get his rematch. Or if not, if you have to have Fedora versus Terence Crawford, let's get Tim Tszyu versus Errol Spence. That would be an amazing fight to watch. I think both those guys will really go at it. But Tszyu deserves a rematch. But if not, give Tszyu another big fight against Errol Spence. I think that would be dope. So that was my boxing talk. A lot of boxing talk. I know that normally I don't do, almost 30 minutes before I go into my music, but it was a lot to get into. So hopefully you enjoyed the boxing talk. If you're here for the basketball talk, that is coming around the corner. So just stay here, listen to some dope music, and I'll be right back talking some basketball.
Touchdown in London town. bet they give me a pound. Tell them put the money in my hand right now. Got a promoter, we need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats.
Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA. It's really, really nice to meet ya. I just met this 5'7" guy who's just my type. Like the way he's speaking, his confidence is peaking. Don't like his baggy jeans, but I like what's underneath it. And no, I ain't been to MIA. I heard the Cali never rains, but New York's wide awake. First, let's see the West End. I'll show you to my brethren. I'm liking this American boy. American boy. Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA. I really want to come pick it with you. You'll be my American boy. American boy. I'm loving no show toes. Walking in that wall, talk that slick talk. Liking this American boy, American boy. Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA. I really want to come pick it with you. You'll be my American boy.
Tell him walk, walk, like who killing them in the UK? Everybody gonna say UK reluctantly, cause most of this press don't fuck with me. Estelle once said, tell me cool down, down. Don't act a fool now, now. Always act a fool, ow, ow. Ain't nothing new now, now. He crazy, I know what you're thinking. Rapping, I know what you're drinking. Rap singer, chain blinger. Holla at the next chick soon as you're blinking. What's your persona about this Americana? Rhymer, am I shallow? Cause all my clothes design. Dress small like a London bloke. Before he speak, his soup he spoke. And you thought he was cute before. Look at this peacoat, tell me he's broke. And I know you ain't into all that. I heard your lyrics, I feel your spirit. But I still talk that cash, cause a lot of wags wanna hear it. And I'm feeling like Mike at his baddest. Like the pics of the Gladys. And I know they love it, so the hell with all that rubbish.
Would you be my lover? Would you be mine? Would you be my lover? Would you be mine? Could you be my lover? Would you be my American boy? American boy.
Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday.
Take me to Chicago, San Francisco, babe. I really want to come pick it with you. You'll be my American boy. My American boy.
Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now let's talk some basketball. I want to give a shout out to my guy, Jerome Chambers, who sent me a post that got me thinking. He sent me a post from a basketball group. I don't remember who posted it. My apologies. But someone posted in a basketball group on Facebook about how CP3, Chris Paul in his prime, was actually more skilled than Kyrie Irving. And all the comments were like, you're crazy, Kyrie Irving is the most skilled point guard we've ever seen, blah, 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 right? And it got me thinking, what are the actual skills of basketball? Because Kyrie is a very skilled dribbler. He's the best ball handler we've seen probably all time. He has the best handles we've ever seen. His creativity with hesitations, crossovers, with honestly sometimes it's just out of the jab step, doing very little, but knowing just how to manipulate his defender to get to where he wants to go. His ability to finish at the rim. He's one of the most gifted finishers we've ever seen at being able to finish very difficult layups in very difficult positions. He is a very good shooter on all three levels. But I believe that there's more to skills than just scoring. Passing is a skill. One of the reasons Nikola Jokic is looked at as such a skilled player is that he may be the best passing big man we've ever seen. So passing is a skill. Defense is a skill. A lot of people don't think of defense as a skill. A lot of people think of defense as effort. Yes, part of it is being willing to put in the effort, being willing to just work. That is a part, a big part of being a good defender. But if you've ever played basketball, you've played against somebody who's willing to put in the work on defense, who's a tryhard. They're hustling the whole time, but they're not good at defense. Normally, if you're playing pickup ball, and I'm talking about not on an NBA level, I'm talking about somebody like me who played in high school, played a little bit afterwards, but you're playing pickup ball and you're not playing against former pros, you're playing against normal people. The dude who's going extra hard on defense normally isn't a basketball player. They're a guy who plays basketball, right? A basketball player is somebody who loved basketball, grew up playing basketball, played organized ball at some point. A guy who just plays basketball, somebody who just end up playing as cardio. They go to the gym, they work out, they play ball as cardio. Maybe a good athlete. Maybe they were a football player, soccer player, something like that. So they're a good athlete, but they don't know how to play basketball like that, right? And sometimes that guy is the guy who's trying extra hard on defense. But they don't have the skill of defense. So they all, they breathing hard, they all up in your shirt. They trying to move their feet. They playing physical. But if you're a basketball player who's any decent, you know, with a jab step, maybe a little crossover, you get open, you can get to the rim. If they're not hacking you the whole time, that's another thing. Usually those guys are fouling you the whole time. So if you're playing against one of those guys, you realize defense is not just effort. It's not just hustle. It's a skill. Like when you watch Drew Holiday, Derek White, Herb Jones on the perimeter, that's skill. It takes skill to be that good on defense. To be able to anticipate the movements of the offensive player. To get in front of them in a way where you're not fouling them. Because it's very hard, even, like I said, today's NBA, even with the refs not calling as many fouls after the All-Star break, it's still hard to play defense and not foul against these players today who are so quick, so fast, so skilled. So the good defenders, the good perimeter defenders, like the ones I named, like Jalen Suggs and others, those guys are very skilled at what they do. That's a skill. The shot blockers, the ones who can both move their feet on switches and protect the rim, that's a skill. It takes skill to time a jump for a block shot. A lot of guys can jump high. Not everyone who can jump high is a good shot blocker, because you can pump fake them up to the air, get your layup. So knowing when to jump, timing the jump, is a skill. Being able to move your feet just enough to where you're not only just a shot blocker, but you also can not be a liability on the switch, is a skill. So you see somebody like Victor Wembanyama getting all those blocks. Of course, the fact that he's a 7'4 alien with a million wingspan helps, of course. But it's timing, it's skill that goes into it. When you see someone like Herb Jones getting steals, of course his long wingspan helps, but it's skill that goes into that. So when you talk about skill, you talk about shooting on all three levels. That means floaters, mid-range, threes, deep threes. You're talking about handles, passing. You're talking about finishing at the rim, different layups. And you're also talking about defense. And that's perimeter, being able to stay in front of your guy. That's also being able to steal the ball in the passing lanes or from the dribbler or blocking shots. That all takes skills. So when you think about it in that way, it's not crazy to say that Chris Paul overall was more skilled than Kyrie. Kyrie has a better handle than Chris Paul, but Chris Paul also had an amazing handle, still has an amazing handle. So it's not like the gap between their handles are that crazy. Kyrie's an amazing finisher at the rim. Chris Paul is also a very good finisher at the rim. The gap isn't that crazy. And when it comes to their shooting, who's the better shooter? You can make the argument Chris Paul is the better shooter. Passing, Chris Paul's the better passer. Defense, Chris Paul's the better defender. So then you look at it that way, like, oh, not that crazy to say Chris Paul is more skilled than Kyrie. Steph Curry. Steph Curry has an amazing handle. Of course, he's the best shooter of all time. Also a good finisher, like his layup package is underrated. Decent passer, not on the level of Chris Paul. Defender has become decent, not a liability. But there was during their run as champions, Klay Thompson took on the tougher guard because he was a better defender. So when it comes to all-around skill, Kyrie Irving is not the most skilled point guard of all time. Not close. So I put together a little list of my all-time skill teams. All right? So my point guard for my all-time skill team, I got Magic Johnson. Magic handles is crazy. His passing is crazy. Decent defender. Wasn't the best shooter. Definitely could finish at the rim. His combination of passing and handles, along with being an okay shooter, makes him the most skilled point guard of all time, in my opinion. Shooting guard. Gotta go Michael Jordan. You talk about an all-time great defender. You're talking about a great finisher at the rim. The amazing highlights as far as his, not just him dunking on people. Because I know dunking on people, that's not really, that's a skill. But people don't think of it as skillful because it takes so much athleticism to do it. But the layups around the rim, which takes athleticism as well, don't get me wrong. But Jordan also had that, along with scoring on all three levels. Wasn't the greatest three-point shooter, give you that. But his accuracy as far as his mid-range, come on. Good handles. Like, good handles. People don't think of Jordan as of somebody who had handles, but had handles. So I have to go with Jordan as the most skilled two-guard. At the three, that's tough. You could go Larry Bird. Larry Bird, great passer. That's one thing that gets forgotten about him. Great passer. Rebounder. Rebounding is a skill. I forgot to mention that. Rebounding is a skill. Great rebounder. Very good passer. Great rebounder. We all know he's a great shooter. Decent ball handler. LeBron has everything. LeBron has everything. Handles, doesn't have like this crazy handle package, but because of his physicality and having just a good enough handle, he knows how to get to where he wants to get to. Kevin Durant can be right there as well. Doesn't have the passing and rebounding of Bird or LeBron, but scoring, finishing, good defender, he's right there as well. From a power forward, Kevin Garnett might be the most skilled power forward of all time. You talk about handles, can handle like almost like a point guard. Like it was crazy for that generation for a power forward to have those handles. Great shooter, mid-range. In his T-Wolves days, which kind of get lost now, man, the fadeaways, the shimmies with the shoulders, over each shoulder he can shoot. Like, dude was nasty with it. Defensively, one of the greatest defenders of all time. So he's the most skilled power forward in my opinion. Now, of course, there's others. There's Dirk, but Dirk didn't have the defense. There's C-Webb, the passing ability of C-Webb, along with what he did on offense, shooting, very skilled. Rasheed Wallace, very skilled. There's a lot of power forwards you can put there, but KG, I believe, the most skilled power forward of all time. At center, gotta go Hakeem Olajuwon. Gotta go Hakeem Olajuwon. The ability to shoot, finish at the rim, dream shake, most skilled offensively, and then defensively, I believe is the greatest defender of the modern generation. When I say modern, or I shouldn't say generation, modern era. I'm talking about from 1980 till now, as far as just all around skill. He's the only center in history who's in the top 50 in steals all time. Hakeem is amazing, amazing. So for my all-time skill team, Magic, MJ, Bird, KG, Hakeem. If you want to go to second team, I would go Chris Paul, Kobe, Bron, maybe Barkley at the four because of rebounding, as well as with all the things he could do. And Embiid. Now, some people go crazy with Embiid, but you look at what Embiid can do when healthy. Now, availability, I don't think that's a skill. It's more of a tangible or intangible. Durability, not a skill. That's something that he lacks, of course. The reason I have him over Joker is the defense. Now, Joker, you can put right there. If you have Joker over Embiid skill-wise, I get it, because Joker, amazing passer, amazing shooter, can do it all offensively, and defensively isn't garbage. Embiid's an amazing defender. So that's why I put Embiid over Joker there. But those are just some of my thoughts on skill. I think that we get so enamored with the handles and the crazy layups and the deep shots that we forget, man, passing is a skill. Like Luka Doncic is more skilled than Kyrie Irving, because of the passing aspect of it. He also makes the tough shots. He can finish at the rim. The footwork that he does when he is posting somebody up, that's skill, right? So for me, you really have to think about skill in that way. Like you think about other players who kind of underrated in that aspect. Of course, Paul George, you know, he's so smooth, you know, he's super skilled. Brandon Ingram. The Pelicans are missing him right now. Super skilled. Handles. Can score on all three levels. Very good passer. Like, his passing ability is very underrated. And the league right now has so many skilled players. So many great skilled players. But you got to remember that skill is a combination of a lot of things. Not just the fancy things that get highlights. But everything that you as a basketball player almost involves skill. So that's just my spill on the most skilled players. So hopefully you enjoyed that. We're going to take our last music break and talk more NBA. We'll be right back.
Love, love, love.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now we're back talking more basketball. So I just talked about some of the most skilled players of all time. And a lot of those players play today. So let's look at the standings right now. I'm coming to you on Sunday evening. So happy Easter. And looking at the standings, let's start with the Eastern Conference. You got the Celtics, who just got off of two bad losses against the Atlanta Hawks. They recovered by beating my Pelicans. And are still in very firm place at first place in the Eastern Conference at 58-16. At two, you got the Bucks at 47-27, who are still finding their way, but definitely helps when Chris Middleton is playing. They're a different team. I think they're still going to be dangerous if all three of their guys, Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, and Giannis, are healthy. The Cavaliers at 45-30. They just got beat today by the Denver Nuggets. Got away in the second half. And it's still a big question mark around them. Come playoff time, can they do it? They made some good changes to the roster, but we still got to wait and see. The Knicks at four. Tough, rugged team. If we get Nuggets, or not Nuggets, excuse me, we get Knicks, Magic, in the first round, that's going to be an old school. I can see some of them games being like 90-85. That's going to be an old school, just knock out, drag out defensive battle that I'm going to love every minute of. Because every possession is going to matter. Every possession is going to go down to the last 10 seconds. You're going to have some fast breaks. You're going to get some steals here and there. But it's going to be execution heavy basketball, which most of the playoffs is, but that series right there, if it happens, which we still can have some changes happen because the Knicks are only a half a game behind the Cavaliers and the Magic only 1.5 games above the Pacers, so it's not in stone yet, but I'm kind of rooting for that series just to see an old school, like Knicks Heat type matchup. Like that's what it kind of reminds me of. At six, we got the Pacers. Seven, we got the Heat. Eight, we got the 76ers. Still holding on. They say they're expecting Joel Embiid back in April, which can be dangerous because if they mess around and get the 7 or 8 seed, we got Joel Embiid coming back for the 76ers against the Bucks or the Celtics. Very interesting first round series. Without Joel Embiid, they might as well be a G League team. Like, it's bad out there. So we're going to have to see what happens there. Miami, they just... it's hard to put my finger on it. They are a team that you still have to respect come playoff time because of what they did last year. But I would not expect them to beat the Bucks this year. I wouldn't expect them to beat the Celtics this year. So I can see, I'm calling it, they're not going to make a run to the finals. Yeah, I said it. I just don't see that happening. You got the Bulls at 9 and the Hawks at 10. The Hawks, trade Trae Young in the offseason. Go ahead and do it. Right? You're playing better without him. I understand that Trae Young is very good. And you can possibly still get a lot for him. But go ahead and trade him. Build your team around DeJounte Murray, Jalen Johnson, rest of the crew. And get a lot for Trae Young. The Spurs are probably willing to give a lot for him to pair him with Victor Wembanyama. But why are you holding on to it at this point? I understand it's hard to give up on a guy who you traded Luka Doncic for. People forget that. Like, they traded Luka Doncic for Trae Young. And Luka Doncic is Luka. He's going to be an MVP candidate every year. Like, this, it was a bad trade. It was really bad. Trae Young has been very good. Don't get me wrong. And he's gotten the Hawks to the conference finals, just like Luka's gotten Dallas to the Western Conference Finals, but Luka's a much better player. Let's not try to fool ourselves. And I think that the Hawks, because they made that mistake, are doubling down on it by committing to Trae Young. When DeJounte Murray and others, you can build around that going forward with the trade of Trae Young getting assets. And that's it for the Eastern Conference. No need to talk about the rest of the teams. Let's get to the West. swear, it's crazy. So right now, as we speak, the OKC Thunder are first at 52-22. The Nuggets are right there at 52-23. Then you have the Timberwolves, who are 51-23. They lost a bad one today to the Bulls. The Clippers have no shot pretty much of getting the top three spots, so they're trying to hold on to that fourth spot. They're 47-27. You have quality 1-3 in a row. The Dallas Mavericks, winners of 7 in a row, are now in the fifth spot. They have the same record with the Pelicans at 45-29. The Pelicans are trying to hold on through a tough part of their schedule while they wait for Brandon Ingram to come back. The Sacramento Kings are at the seventh spot at 43-31. Same record as the Phoenix Suns, who are in the eighth spot, 43-31. I talked about this last episode. The Suns, they might want to try to get into the top six because they messed around and missed the playoffs. Them beating the Kings in a 7-8 matchup is not a given. And them beating the winner of Lakers-Warriors or Lakers-Rockets isn't a given either. You can find themselves missing the playoffs completely with a roster that's going to cost Matt Ishbia a pretty penny. Nine, we got the Lakers. 10, we got the Warriors, who have quietly won 4 in a row. They felt the pressure from the Rockets, who were previously on a very long winning streak before they lost to Dallas today. Man, it's tough out here, man. And I love it. I love it. The play-in was such a great idea. The game today between the Mavericks and Rockets was a perfect indication of that. You had the Mavericks, who were in the sixth spot coming into today, trying to make sure they stay in the top six. You had the Rockets, who are in the 11th spot, trying to climb into the top 10 to get a play-in spot. Normally, that team that's in 11 wouldn't have anything to play for in years prior. But because of the play-in, the Rockets go on this late season winning streak and now have a legit shot of ruining a ratings bonanza that would be Lakers-Warriors. The Rockets can do that. And the Rockets, they have a tough schedule going forward, but they still got a shot. And just looking at some of the games tomorrow, right? Suns-Pelicans tomorrow. Big time game. Because of the play-in. Because you got the Suns who are trying to climb out. You got the Pelicans who are trying to hold on and stay in the top six. It's a must-win game for both teams. And as a Pelicans fan, I'm a little worried. No Brandon Ingram still. Know the Suns are tough. Devin Booker cooked us last time. He scored like 52 points last time we played. Cooked us. So it's going to be a very interesting game on Monday night. Then Tuesday, you have Mavericks-Warriors. Big time matchup. Both teams are in must-win positions. You got Rockets-Timberwolves. Clippers-Kings. All those games are playoff atmosphere games because of the play-in. Wednesday, you got more games with all of those things mattering because of that. Pelicans Magic, Cavaliers Suns. Man, it's tough. It's tough, and I love it. Oh, man, you got to love the NBA, man. You got to love it. And just some of my thoughts watching basketball this past week. Luka, absolute monster. Scored 22 in the first quarter against the Rockets. And one thing I saw from Dallas that I didn't see from the Rockets, early on, Dallas was making it very hard for Jalen Green to get to work. Jalen Green's been balling out of his mind lately, and Dallas was like, okay, we're going to take the ball out of his hands. We're going to make somebody else beat us. The Rockets didn't do that to Luka. Luka got to go to work, and he was hot, and they pretty much rolled from there. And now you can say the Mavericks, they also have Kyrie Irving, so you can't really do that because they can go see their next guy. Houston, they got Fred VanVleet, you know, they got Jabari, but don't have anybody on the skill or playing at the level that Jalen Green's playing at. Houston's going to be very, very interesting going forward, because what do you do with Sengun? Is your team run through Sengun, right? Or do you allow what's going on with Jalen Green now to say, okay, we're going to give him the keys? Or do you need to see more? Do you need to see more than just a month of this? Is this just a flash in the pan? Or just a real thing with Jalen Green where he can truly be the key to your offense and open up for others? Because if teams are starting to play him like this, where they're doubling him off of pick and rolls, they're blitzing him, they're trying to get the ball out of his hands, that's going to make it easier, especially when you have a Sengun. So if you have a Sengun in that spot where you're giving him the ball and now it's 4 versus 3 because 2 were attached to Jalen Green, Sengun can make those plays for you. So this emergence of Jalen Green could be very powerful going forward with Sengun coming back next year. And we'll see. They still may have a chance to make the play-in this year. But just love what's going on going forward. If you're an NBA fan, I know that a lot of people are just caught up in the college basketball right now. I had no interest in it. I'm not going to lie to you. I had no interest in the men's side. The women's side I do have interest in. I ain't going to lie to you. The women's side is very interesting. The men's side I had no interest in. I know the story of NC State is cool with old dude, the bigger dude, Burns, was out there balling, but okay. I feel like there's been years prior where I was able to get into the tournament after not really being into it during the regular season, but this year was different. I wasn't watching college basketball at all outside of covering Arizona State for a few weeks. Had no interest in it at all. And then when I did cover Arizona State, I was like, yo, I could see why I lost interest. Like, you have no connection to the players. The players have no connection to the schools. You have players who literally you'll hear an announcer say, oh, this player has finally found his home after his 4th transfer. Like, what are we doing? Why are you transferring that many times? And I get that you want the players to have power to go where they want to go. Understand that, because previously if you wanted to transfer, you had to really be sure about that, because if you transfer from one D1 school to another D1 school, you had to sit a year. So you had to really be sure about that. Now, the coach can say one thing to make you mad, and you'd be like, I'm going to go. I'm out of here. And I feel like coaches are kind of hamstrung by that, and they can't really be honest with the kids, or honest with the young adults, I should say. It's like, what is it that we're getting here? I think it's hurt college basketball in a major way. Men's college basketball. Now, don't get me wrong, women are transferring too, but it's not the same rate. It's not the same rate, right? Because Andrew Reese was a transfer to LSU, right? I get that. But it's one transfer, you know, and it's, we still get to know them by the time they're there. By the time they go pro, we know who they are already. The best players in college, like that team in Kentucky team that lost, a lot of them are going pro and they're going to be a new team. There's not going to be any of them trying to redeem themselves at Kentucky. You don't get that story. With the women's side, you have stories, you have connections, you know the players. Men's side, you know Burns now because of the tournament and NC State making this improbable run, but it's not really a connection there. I didn't even make a bracket this year for the first time in years because it was just like, why? I have no connection to it. So the NBA is my game. I get it if you love college basketball. And then the people who are just dishonest about saying that they like college more because it's played better, stop it. It's definitely not played better. The NBA is so much better. It's like a totally different game than college. Like, it's, the level is just, it's a totally different sport, basically. And you can tell the guys in college who are going to be in the NBA, because it's like they're playing a different sport. It's that different. But hopefully you enjoyed this episode, man. Me just rambling about boxing and basketball, what I love to do. And I know I have some listeners out there who love it, so I appreciate you guys. Make sure you follow me on social media at The Real Deal, WDA. That's The Real Deal. W as in whiskey, D as in Delta, A as in Alpha on all social media platforms. Make sure you support all sports podcasters out there, especially the ones who don't have a major platform, because the celebrities and other athletes are killing it. I'm not mad at that, but give a chance to the guys who watch the sports, who have different observations, who may not be former athletes, who may not be current athletes. Give them a shot. You have good thoughts too. You have good observations too. You can be entertaining too, all right? And until next time, go real or go home.